Listeners, hello. A quick note that we had some microphone difficulties in this episode, so we're using the backup audio from Zoom, and it still sounds fine, but you will be returned to your regular pristine sound quality next episode. Far away.
Hello!
Welcome back to the Catchula of Hearts podcast, the Catching Kelsey podcast that asks the question, Xavier, how often do you find yourself falling in the toilet?
It's a personal question and I prefer not to answer.
Fair enough. Some people bathe in toilet. I bathe myself, I prefer to bathe myself in glory.
The thing is, at my place, we've got this humongous toilet, and it's like everyone, you know, because we have visitors sometimes. It's me and my housemate. So it's like just more like water efficient, I think, if we all just kind of go at once.
There's these little like kois that are swimming around in it, as I recall.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. Max Quinn's my name. They are Xavier RN. Hey, Xavi, how you doing?
Hello. My name's Xavier Rebetsky Noonan. I love The Bachelor. IHOP. I love coming here for breakfast. I think it'll have the T-bone steak and eggs, please. Ha ha, with some white toast on the side. And I hate the coronavirus. And yes, as you heard, joining me as always is my co-host and tight friend, Mr. Max Quinn. How are you, Maxwell?
You know, I'm so good. I'm so excited to dig into episode 2 of Catching Kelsey. And as we get there, we want to acknowledge that we are recording on the unceded Gadigal lands of the Eora Nation. This always was and always will be Aboriginal land. Hi, and thank you for being here if you are a First Nations BOH pod listener today. We recap episode 2 of Planet Earth's best new dating show from 2016, Catching Kelsey. And to help us along the way, the welcome return of a dear friend. She's a songwriter and podcaster and journalist. She is a specialist at a deep dives and deep thoughts and deep frying. I ran out of deep things. But
we don't know. It's untested, but
we haven't tested the hypothesis. That's true. It is, though, with the deepest of appreciation and excitement that we welcome Eilish Gilligan back to the BOH pod. Hi, Eilish.
Hi, how's it going?
Ooh, welcome back.
Thank you. Thank you. It's been a while.
Yeah, I feel like it's been a year and a half, maybe, since we last
spoke to you.
Yeah.
It's been almost 3 years. Can you believe that?
No, that's not true.
It was 2021. Funny. There have been some events between then and now. There's no excuse for waiting this long to have you back on the pod. And I think we said that last time, too. You should be here every week. And in fact, I'm retiring now.
Hey, we got to talk about the new record first.
Oh, yes.
Final Girl, your debut album. It's been out for a couple of weeks. How's it been?
It's been good. I was just saying before we started recording that I'm like really, really, really proud of it, but also like super, super, super over it. So it's a weird like push and pull of feelings of like, oh my God, I can't believe I did that. This sounds so amazing. Like never, ever play it for me again, ever.
Eilish, it's so good. I think you should be so proud. I definitely relate to never wanting to hear something new. Like when it comes to editing this podcast, even like something we do not put nearly as much time and effort and energy into, I'm always like, ugh, who would have said that if I had my time again? You know, I don't want to deal with that version of myself or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, it's similar to somebody who edits podcasts as well. It's similar. Once you go a few rounds of edits on a podcast and you've done a couple of rounds of pickups and you're like, oh my God, don't ever let me near a microphone ever again. We have to prevent this.
I do want to talk about your podcasting endeavors with Shameless in just a minute, but I want to gas you up even more about the record because it is just everything that I imagine when I think about you. It's like it's clever and thoughtful and measured and cool and pushing pop music into places that I find to be like rewarding and relieving and fun. And you have been coming on this show for 6 years. And to tie a bow around it, I suppose, we check in every so often. In what ways have you stayed in touch with who you were as you have been becoming Final Girl?
Wow, that's actually such a good question. And thank you so much. Thank you to both of you for listening to it. Like, it's, I cannot, every single stream, like, I notice and appreciate. So if anyone has listened to that record, thank you so much. I often think about that picture that we took. I think it was on my first Bachelor of Arts.
Yeah, at my old house in Melbourne.
Yes, I think about that girl and I'm like, number one, she's like a child, like she should not be allowed out unsupervised. And secondly, like, I don't know her. I don't know her at all. Like, I remember what it was like to be her, but I don't know her. Her decisions are bewildering to me. So it is really, I look back on her with fondness, but it is not a feeling of, oh, that was me in 2016. It's like, that's a stranger. Mm. I don't know her, you know?
Less a time capsule and more like that little internal ouch that you get when, like, maybe that's the feeling that you're describing.
Don't they say that, like, every cell in your body is, like, replaced gradually and over a 7-year period, you're literally, like, a whole new person?
Yeah, I feel like that 100%. And I should clarify that although I am sick of the record and although I don't know that girl, I do have fondness for her and I have empathy and sympathy for her because, you know, your 20s are, like, that is the trenches. That, if anyone is listening and you're in your 20s, dude, it gets better. I'm telling you right now, it gets so much better. I feel so, like, I saw you guys and you were like, how old are you, Eilish? And I was like, oh, so bad. But your 30s are so good. I've only been 30 for less than a year, but it slays. And
few people are 30 for more than a year. I should probably.
Yeah.
So in terms of being 30, you're kind of on par.
Yeah, that's true. But it is so much better. I know who I am now, and that feels so good, although I'll probably redact that in like 3 years' time.
I'm sure, like, liable to redact that in like 3 minutes' time. So I think that's really an admirable thing that you're putting yourself forward to say. Look, things have gotten better also because we get to know you more through your podcasting and through the work that you're doing with Shameless and that you have been doing over the last 12 months or so. Can you tell us a little bit about what's going on there, what listeners can expect from shows from you, how they can find and interact with you? Because we love talking to you once every 6 years, but the listeners can hear you once every much more often.
Yeah. So, again, thank you for asking. I work at Shameless Media. I'm a pop culture journalist and I have my own podcast. It's called Stranger Than Fiction with the Shameless Book Club. And if I do say so myself, it's really good and you should listen to it. But my main job at Shameless is scripting and researching a podcast that they do called Scandal, which is looking back on major pop culture moments in history from all the way back from like Marilyn Monroe to, I was going to say what I'm researching now, but I shouldn't spoil it. We just did a like Taylor Swift year in review.
Interesting. And
yeah. And I really think that my skill set, my very specific skill set of being nosy, chronically online, a decent writer, all of those things have really joined together and created, you know, a lady who is perfect for this very, very specific job.
In your deep dive into Taylor Swift and your year in review, obviously, you've come across Travis Kelce, and we're here to talk about episode 2 of the show. Can we get from you a sense of what your first impression was when it was revealed that Taylor and Travis were together, and where you are with him now.
So I have this really unfortunate affliction that I'm trying to work through where I find Travis Kelce unfathomably, like, sexy. He is so hot to me.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. He's so hot. And
this is a good perspective because I feel like I'm working my way there. And I don't know where Max really stands on it. Like, you know, but I think it's good to have somebody on the show who is coming in hot, because I'm sure there are people listening who feel the same way.
Definitely coming in hot. Although I will say there are times, and I felt them watching Catching Kelce, there are times where I get like the existential ick. It's like beyond a normal ick. It's like, I don't know. I mean, I assume you both saw the Super Bowl, but at the end, when he was on the stage singing Viva Las Vegas, it was over. It was over for me.
Right. That's Jim Nantz, though. Truly. Like, so that's the commentator who's interviewing him on the podium, Jim Nantz, really stitching him up, because last year he sang Fight for Your Right to Party. And so now the way that I looked and interpreted that was like, oh man, like Jim Nantz is putting Travis Kelce on the spot and he kind of has to
sequelitis. Dance. It's the second album problem, you know?
Yeah.
how do you top the hit?
Yeah. I mean, but you know what does bother me a little bit is that after watching these two episodes of Catching Kelce, I've identified the personality type that he is giving in this television program. He's giving Chris Pratt in Guardians of the Galaxy.
Oh, that's really interesting.
Yeah.
That, to me, is not good. But at the same time, he's so sexy. So it's, you know, I'm really grappling with some really complicated things at the moment.
Yeah, there is some amount of, like, ADHD Chris Pratt in there. I landed in a different place, and we'll get to it as we move through this episode. And I'm excited to talk to you about where that is.
I have two questions.
Okay.
They're unrelated. I wanted to address both of these things. Eilish, you were at the Eras tour. Am I right? You went to see Taylor Swift in Melbourne.
Yes.
Did you get to hang out with Travis like I did?
No. And I'm so annoyed.
Oh.
Because the thing about, like, Melbourne, I mean, Melbourne versus Sydney, blah, blah, blah. It's a stupid thing. It's been going on for way too long.
Yeah.
I will say I am a little bit annoyed at how much Sydney received at the Eras Tour. They got Katy Perry in the VIP tent, Katy Perry watching Bad Blood, Travis Kelce. What else did they get?
Oh my God, I didn't mean to ask an insensitive question. I forgot that he was not at the Melbourne shows at all.
He was not at the Melbourne shows. I did not get to catch Kelce at the MCG when I was having a panic attack amongst 96,000 people, because that's just altogether way too many people.
Yeah.
but yeah, how did you see him? Did you see
him? Yeah, I saw him. I was on the very kind of opposite. Well, not very opposite. I was probably like 110 degrees away from him on the stadium. So we were pretty far apart, but I did see like the majority of the floor seated people turning around when he was making his entrance. Yeah, I was aware of some of his actions through crowd noise that then, you know, became more clear what was happening during, you know, scrolling through TikTok the next day or whatever. But we did hang out, and he was on the podcast last week. I don't think that episode's come out yet. So
it hasn't even been edited yet, but that, as it turns out, will be making it into the edit. So that's good.
Oh, fantastic.
I'm
intrigued.
Okay.
And I've probably guaranteed that by saying that.
Yep.
Yeah. He was pretty chill. Yeah. I don't want to ruin it, but yeah, like I think the goofy sort of persona that we're getting here really, really stands true on a personal level. Anyway, I didn't bring that up just to brag. Another question I had for you, Eilish, is we did a lot of like table setting during our first episode, we were talking about what 2016 was like. And I guess we talked about this briefly with you, and like that is, I think, around the time that we met you. And
yeah, for sure.
Yeah, maybe it was a few months after this aired or something, I guess. But like, what was your life like? What do you remember from this time? I'm guessing you probably weren't finely attuned to the football star reality TV show world at that point, but any special memories tied to that time?
I seem to recall I was working in PR. I was a music publicist. I was in a couple of bands, but I was just getting my solo thing started. God, it's so scary how you just can't remember some things.
Totally.
Like, I can't really remember what happened in 2016 except for Trump getting elected.
Yeah. And you played a big role in that, right? You had a...
yeah, I was working on music. I think I met Gab, a Japanese wallpaper, that year as well, has been a massive, you know, one of my best friends and a huge musical collaborator. I think we met that year and I started playing in his band, and
yeah,
that's what I was doing.
So
don't know what else.
You were crushing it. That rules.
We got to start now with our recap of episode 2 of Catching Kelsey.
This is one of the most chaotic reality TV episodes in my recent memory. Like, the things that happen on this, the breakneck speed at which they happen. I was flummoxed. I was delighted. I think we're going to have so much to chew on as we talk about this episode.
We will begin by chewing on Kansas City barbecue at the mansion. I did experience this phenomenon last year at the fine dining establishment named Guy Fieri's Dive and Taco Joint, Kansas City.
But holy shit. Max, how am I just finding out you went to see Fieri?
Yeah. It was... it was certainly something, and something that really was only scratching the surface of what's available in Kansas City. One thing that's not that we found out is vegetables. That food group, they haven't quite gotten there yet. But before we left, me and Lauren, who is a vegetarian, were looking up like where to eat in Kansas City, and it's all barbecue. Everywhere across the town is like the most brown establishments. We came across this TikTok series that, like, I just want to put this to you as a concept. It's called Meet With My Man, M-E-A-T. And it's basically these two, like, husband and wife who travel all over America so that this man can acquire heart disease while Back in Black plays in the background. I will send it to you afterwards, but my impression of it, which will do it just as much justice, I'm sure, is, like, she goes, like, my man loves me. This is, and then he goes, meet with my man. And then, like, he cuts in. He's the only voice that you hear from now on. Like, I don't understand where she's gone, what's going on. And he has this, like, aggressively constipated way of speaking that's like, we're here at Slaps Barbecue. We're trying the triple slap stack. And it is just,
Can I say, you really nailed that cadence, that TikTok cadence of the woman speaking. That was uncanny. Very, very good.
Look, I've watched enough Meet With My Man to be able to nail it. I want to also just highlight how funny some of these barbecue joint names are. Because we're sitting there, we've got Slaps Barbecue. It's the classic. Everyone knows it. Xavi, you're a big Slaps guy. You said this.
Oh, that place slaps.
Does, right? But what about Night Goat? How do you feel about that?
They don't open till after my bedtime.
Yeah. And then
they're the greatest of all time.
We do know also about the Hog Jaw Q and Brew and the Pork and Pickle. A lot of good stuff here.
Yeah, I actually run that place. It's a little venture for me. The Patreon money's nice, but the Pork and Pickle dollars are where it's really at.
So the stakes here at the party are that they're...
Ooh, steaks. That's a good idea.
Yeah, the slap stakes here at the party are that one of Travis's remaining 15 women will be going on a date with Travis at the end of the party. So I want to heavily caveat that, because it won't just be one woman who's going on a date, but we don't find that out till much later.
To use a technical term, I believe this is in reality TV jargon, this is called a lie.
Now, last year in the podcast, Xavi, we spent a considerable amount of time on the show talking about the newfangled American sport of pickleball.
Oh, yeah.
Have either of you heard of cornhole?
No, literally never. It sounds like something I would find on Pornhub.
Yeah, cornhole has bodily implications to me as well.
Let me see if I can sell it to you. I've heard of this sport.
But yeah, talk to me about it. I think I got the gist of what it was just from looking at it, but yeah. maybe there's secrets I'm not aware of.
It's like classic American backyard party fare, and I am personally desperate to play. This is how I would sell it to you, okay? It's basically lawn bowls meets golf. And if that doesn't sound exciting enough... I might also suggest to you that it involves a touch of bocce.
There's just queues around the block for this game, Max.
I don't understand how that would function.
Well, it's a parlor game where basically you're just throwing a little beanbag into a hole on a wooden ball, and then it's like who can get the closest or who can actually get it into the hole.
Okay.
It's like the most stripped down, like acoustic set version of skee ball. You know this skee ball game you play at the arcade where you like throw the ball up the ramp?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You got to get them in?
Yeah, acoustic skee ball is it's probably where I should have gone with it. So we're starting to see the show use this party format similar to how they did last episode as a way to give us more insight into who these women are before we choose one for a single date. Like last episode, we learned that Anika from Minnesota was perhaps a bit odd. More or less, we're beating the same drum here. We see her try to engage Travis in a game of cornhole. I have turned right around on Anika from Minnesota in this episode from being like, this uncanny oddball to now being like, she might be one of the greatest reality TV characters of all time. I am all in on her flying her freak flag. Travis obviously is like not that keen to play cornhole with Anika from Minnesota. And in her words, he decides to stick.
She says, I tried to get Travis to play cornhole, but he decided to stick with the yammering pack of swishing dull hulls.
I got to say, it really annoys me. And this is like a little bit deeper than it needs to be. But, like, the vibe of going onto a show like Catching Kelsey and deciding, like, because I honestly cannot think that this is anything but a informed decision. I am going to go onto this show and I'm going to be, like, I don't want to be a part of the drama. Girls are drama. Like, blah, blah, blah. I'm going to be different. I think there is something really sad and really unfortunate about that attitude and trying to use it to get ahead, I think is a very, very silly move, as we will find out.
Because it's like othering and it's extreme hubris rolled into this one uncomfortable package. And
also like tactically, like it makes sense on a show like The Bachelor where it's like, I can present myself in this different way and it will, you know, I will be representing a different type of person or whatever. But here it's like untested ground. I think you actually should be like just going along with it and having fun because that's what the show's asking you to do.
And can I also ask, what is a swishing dull hull? Do we know this?
I guess a hull, she's probably not talking about like the part of a boat. And then I'm also like, a hull is kind of like the husk of like a grain or something. Is that
fruit,
kind of what like the hull being like the part that you want to throw away?
Yeah, like the bit like that you get off the coconut.
That's as close as I got to understanding this.
Is it like a Minnesota? Is they're from Minnesota? Is it a Minnesota thing?
I Googled it. I could not find anything on it.
Couldn't make sense of it. Max, I'm so excited. I'm so thrilled that you liked Anika because at this point in this episode, I was also fully like, oh, Anika's the best. Anika's my favorite character ever. I'm just planting this seed now and we'll get back to it later. Something happens with Anika later in this episode that absolutely, like, I was jumping up out of my chair. I was completely aghast, not in a super positive way, but in a like truly, truly shocked to the core of my body and soul way. So we'll get back to that.
Lolo from Washington lists some of her deal breakers in a relationship. The main one seems to be having, quote, meaty thighs and not little chicken legs. So she doesn't want the little chicken legs. In her cast bio, she says she's been looking for men in all the wrong places. Like, babe, my eyes are up here.
Wait, they're cast bios.
Oh, yeah.
I don't fucking know that. Oh, the other thing is that she absolutely hates, one of her biggest deal breakers is anyone who uses the elliptical machine.
Okay, not to get on my high horse, but I think there's a prejudice against people who use the elliptical because there's a misconception that it is easy. It's as hard as you want it to be, just like every other equipment, piece of equipment in that place. So you could be on level 25 on the elliptical and barely able to move it, and that is a hugely effective workout. So that's what I think about ellipticals.
Dare I say, it might be a way to obtain some meatier thighs if you wanted to.
Exactly.
That's what I thought. My first reaction was like, well, I'd better use Google because I don't know what an elliptical machine is. And then I looked it up and I'm like, yeah, it's a leg exercise thing. And I'm like, well, what the hell? You can't have it both ways.
So this is where Maya from Kentucky claims to have fallen in the toilet when a man has left the toilet seat up. What is this? Has anyone heard of this before?
I guess, like, no. if you don't realize that the seat is up, well, the other thing I've just realized is that in America, the toilets are fucking crazy.
Yeah,
like, both of you guys
weird.
Have been to America, right? Everything's going weird with toilets over there, right?
Yeah.
They got, like, 100 liters of water in there. They're, like, too far down or too high up or something, I think. Is that right?
Too low to the ground.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe it's a riskier endeavor over there. Maybe that actually is something that could happen.
Yeah, I just felt like I don't need more things to be personally afraid of.
Especially while using the toilet.
Here's a question that I have for you. Is Travis a himbo?
I actually think he might be a little bit too clever to be a himbo.
Mm.
I could see people who are not himbologists like bringing him up as an example of himbography. But I think like... I don't know. Maybe he's a bit of a square peg in a round toilet hole, you know?
I will say he obviously had a well-documented himbo era because of the tweets, the hashtag crazy,
swirl,
piece of bread, etc. So there is a golden age of himboism in the life of Travis Kelce, but I don't think that it's right now.
I would argue
he is maybe even trying to step outside the himbo mold. You know, like I think it would be too easy for his entire vibe, his whole life to just be himbo. And I think probably even from around 2016, he's trying to be a bit more than that, you know?
Yes. Yeah.
I think I can say the same of myself, you know? 2016, that was the end of my real himbo era. The reason that I ask about this is that we double down on Travis being, quote, played like a fiddle in his past relationships.
Mm.
What do we think about this? Why is this relevant?
I always get a little bit nervous when a man, and this is on me, I think, maybe, but when a man like Travis Kelce, a incredibly beautiful man wearing a snapback, I do worry a little bit when it comes to a man like that saying things like, oh, I got played, blah, blah, blah. I get a little suspicious and I would like to know her side of the story, like the ex's side of the story. But I also don't want to discount the fact that, hey, yeah, maybe he did get played. I don't know. Maybe he did get cheated on. Maybe it was just that cut and dry. But yeah, I would like to hear the other side of the story.
It is always like a challenging thing when one of the people is totally unknown. And it's like, he shouldn't say who it is or whatever, but it's like, we will never really hear what she has to say about it. And he, on the other hand, is broadcasting his thoughts about it to millions of people and like putting it in the historic record. Like, no matter what the reality is, it's got to be more complicated than I got played, full stop.
Yeah. And so, if we consider that the the shot, the chaser here is that he says to all the girls, when I tell you that I have never cheated on a girl ever, ... as if he is not concurrently dating 15 people to begin with.
Sure.
There's just something there about where he's like, when I tell you that I am doing the bare minimum, this is building some kind of himbo picture for me at this time, at least.
I think that's interesting that you see that playing into the idea of like himbo-ology. I think for me, that statement, unfortunately, Lana Del Rey was really right when she said, you're just a man, that's just what you do.
Mm.
I hold that lyric very close to my heart because, unfortunately, cis men often, no matter how great they are, because they've been brought up under the patriarchy, fall into these thought patterns that are natural and easy because the patriarchy has brought them up a certain way since birth. And I think that this is an example of such an easy pathway to fall down as a attractive cis white man. There's something in being able to say, I don't cheat, and to have five women around him be like, oh, wow, he's this man. He's just, trust is really important to me. So knowing that he doesn't cheat is really good. I mean, what's that about? Like, I shouldn't go on it. Like, I'm not going to go on a date with somebody and say, you know what's really important to me? Me not cheating. Because it's just a given.
Yeah.
Like, it's just what you don't cheat. That's why cheating's so bad, because you don't do it. Mm. And I think it's so annoying to watch somebody be rewarded for saying, I don't cheat. I don't think that's a himbo thing. I think that's an unfortunate byproduct of being an attractive cis white man.
Yeah.
We check in here with Rhode Island Victoria, the self-proclaimed little girl who took herself out of the friend zone in the last episode by macking on with Travis at the elimination. And she's back in the picture here, and I think she's really vaulted herself toward the top of Travis's standings. Travis tells her that she's the only one that he's had this physical connection with, and they kiss again. I'm starting to feel like she's a front runner, but we don't see too much of her for the rest of the episode.
The other women, this is important, that we were wondering on our last episode whether news would spread about the fact that they kissed, because it was away from most of the other women. They definitely know. They're yelling out like, oh, are you going to go talk to him so you can make out with him again? So I sense that that will be a plot thread we'll pick up again in the future episodes.
I'd say so. We have to decide who is going on this date. And we get this deliberation scene between Travis and Jason and manager Aaron about the women. And
it's very much like the expert advice that's being given by these two is like, that woman was hot. Did you think about how that woman was hot? Like, it's not like analytical, you know, it's not like they're not really putting too much thought into it.
Now, a new competition mechanic. Travis will choose one woman to go on the date with, but in a surprise twist, that woman will then choose five other women to come along on the date. Xavier, I know you have thoughts on this.
I mean, yeah, it's kind of cruel, right? Don't you think? To hype up the idea of this being a single date, you know, a traditional batchy one-on-one, and then it just absolutely isn't. And then also, the person that they pick has to then get very deeply embroiled in like mansion politics with the other women of like who gets to come, who doesn't get to come. Sure, you might get a slight statistical like sort of advantage from choosing well, you know, from using this opportunity properly. But also it can completely shoot you in the foot. It's kind of like getting an idol in Survivor, right? Where it's like, or like a public idol, you know, like everybody knows that you have this power. So you've instantly become a target and you didn't ask for that.
As someone who watches a lot of reality TV, the best reality TV machinations are the ones that are justifiable within the narrative of the show. So, for example, the idea of a bachelor taking two women on a date and then one goes home at the end. Mm. I suppose that's justifiable because he really has to whittle down who he's going to spend time with and who he's investing in and blah, 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 or to get to the bottom of drama that's happened in the house.
Yeah.
Now, this has, to me, no even slightly logical explanation within the world of Catching Kelsey other than to cause drama. And I think that makes it a weak narrative choice for the show.
And I also think, like, we don't learn this quite yet, but it's soon revealed that what the date is a commercial shoot. They will be filming an ad for 24-hour fitness. So, like, the prize, I mean, you'll get some extra time with Travis, but basically the prize is you get to do an unpaid internship. And I have to believe that at least a small part of this is like, oh, well, if we can get more, like, bodies, you know, like, if we can get more people for free to do this, like, you know, to film this scene or whatever, particularly because we've only cast very conventionally attractive, you know, like, physically fit, like, people or whatever, who will, any one of them would be perfect to put on this fitness photo shoot, whatever it is. I think part of the idea is just like, yeah, why not? Let's fill out the crowd a little bit, you know?
And so the woman who this headache is delegated to is Maya from Kentucky. We know her best from regularly falling in the toilet and calling Travis daddy. And instead of Catching Kelsey, we are now, it seems, watching a new show called Whom Among These Women That We Don't Know Can Suck Up to a Woman Named Maya That We Also Don't Know The Fastest. And to speak to what you're saying, Eilish, about this being a weaker narrative device, why does Maya have the power and why should we be invested?
I think something that I've noticed watching these two episodes, and maybe I'm jumping ahead a little bit here, but on The Bachelor, when people get booted off, I suppose there's a whole range of different reasons. Usually it's only early on that you hear the lines, we didn't have enough time. If he had enough time to get to know me, I wouldn't have gone home, blah, blah, blah. In this show, I've noticed that what I'm seeing is not enough time for anyone. 50 women, number one, is just way too many,
yeah,
obviously. And I think when you hear those lines on The Bachelor, you kind of go like, yeah, yeah, whatever. You just didn't make a good enough impression. But on this show, I'm hearing some women say, I didn't have enough time. Mm. And I'm like, you know what? I kind of believe you because right. I didn't see you until you were going home, you know?
It's almost hard to imagine, knowing that this is a 7-episode season of TV, it's almost hard to imagine anybody having enough time in that, you know, in that short run to really make, I mean, we know that they don't end up in a very long-lasting relationship, whoever they are, but it stands to reason that they're just not going to really form that strong connection.
For me, the person who stood out in this next segment is the makeup YouTuber Lexi from Georgia. I think she's got the most screen time at the moment among the women. And we recall her from the last episode giving Travis a Georgia peach and saying of another woman, she likes that liquor, she likes that alcohol, she'll mix both together. And
one of the great, one of the great lines.
Like, Lexi is full of good lines on the show, right? So we get this interjection from Lexi as Maya is trying to establish a strategy for who she's going to pick on this date. And it plays out like this. Maya says, do I take my friends and make us all look good? And it's clear that, like, the participle is dangling. We are finishing this sentence and this thought. And Lexi, as soon as she hears the thing that's beneficial to her, jumps in and is like, that's such a good strategy.
I could not stop laughing at that because she literally jumped in with like, yes, I think that's a great idea. Like before, finished talking, and it's just like, queen, hold your cards a little closer to your chest.
Yeah, none too subtle from Lexi there. She continues in ITM talking about Maya forming a strategy in this moment and isolating that, like, well, she's going to have to choose some people. And does she want this kind of person or does she want that kind of person? And Lexi says, Maya is freaking smart. She comes up with this strategy, but obviously I'm just confused.
No. Don't sell yourself short, babes. Come on.
End of sentence.
You don't have to say that.
Samaya does pick Lexi as her ally, and then a handful of women to come along on this group date who Maya calls triple Bs. Bland, basic bitches with zero personality and zero style, some of whom are yet to earn the privilege of having a first name.
Yeah, so in ITM, she refers to them as Jenny, Missouri, New Jersey, and Lolo, which I thought was so funny. Not at all confusing. It's so funny that, like, some of the names are sticking, some of them aren't, because I'm just like, that is such an insight into my brain trying to keep track of this.
I think the BBB insertion is quite interesting as a symptom of, like, American reality television. I noticed this a lot on RuPaul's Drag Race because I think the format lends itself to it a little bit more, but there's a lot of brand, like, there's a lot of developing a personal brand in the moment, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think that BBB thing was something that she, like, was like, I am going to come in with this idea and I'm going to put it on a t-shirt when I'm out of Catching Kelsey and it's going to be really good. I think she, under pressure from producers and under pressure from just where she is trying to develop a point of view. Mm. And that's very difficult to do on the fly.
I think that's an extremely American reality TV way of doing things. To your exact point, it feels like girl dinner in a certain way.
Yes.
Right.
Absolutely.
TikTok is quite good at, like, you know, in order to have something that will stick and be identifiably yours and that you can lay claim to. And yeah, particularly, like, it doesn't even really matter that much what it is or how catchy or well thought out or, you know, well observed it is or whatever. Like, BBBs, she's not making, there's no difference between calling someone a BBB and calling them a bitch. You know what I mean? Like, in the reality TV parlance, it's not a more specific, like, subdivision of type of person or whatever, but because you've given it a name, that then gives you something that you can refer back to.
Yeah. Mm. And so in this instance, Maya does win the race for nomenclature. Jenny from Oregon is going on this date along with Maya, and along with Jenny from Oregon and Maya will be a note that Minnesota Anika has handwritten and passed to Jenny from Oregon to give to Travis. I just want to put that note in our little top pocket because we'll come back to it in a minute.
So Anika from Minnesota has written this letter.
Yes.
She has already proven herself to be an incredible wordsmith by referring to the other women as swishing dull hulls. I also noted that an insert shot shows her writing this letter, and she has been forced to write this with a mechanical pencil on a piece of paper towel. So I think, like, writing a letter for Travis is, like, strictly forbidden, and she has found a way around and into it, which I am really into. I think this is, like, good outside the box thinking. I think this is, you know, this is strategic. This is smart. I'm into it. I don't know why Jenny would agree to do this. Would agree to be the messenger. But I guess we'll talk about this more later.
We arrive at the photo shoot, and Travis is dressed crazy. Big hoodie with writing all over it.
We've already skipped past a point in this episode where I thought he was dressed crazy. He's got some looks on this show.
You know what? This is so 2016. That plaid, I can't remember if it was in this episode or the first one, but that plaid suit that he was wearing.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's coming up. Honestly, that describes a few outfits that he wears. he had, like, a crazy loud Hawaiian shirt at the start of this episode as well. Like, just a lot of stuff.
Oh, my God. And they were making such a big deal about how good he looked. There was this one confessional where the girl was like, he's wearing this Hawaiian shirt. And it was like, it switched to him wearing the Hawaiian shirt, and it was so bright it, like, blinded me. It was just like my eyes. It was
right. Show was so loud I had to mute my TV.
He is also wearing a pair of Yeezy Red Octobers, which are a Nike shoe that, in the modern day, in Travis's shoe size, which is a 14, resell for about $47,000.
Oh my God!
Yeah, crazy. The girls will all be in this video with Travis, and Maya is bricking it because, oops, she picked three women who are extremely into fitness. Now, another plot twist. at the end of this group date, Travis will pick another woman for what he's calling a VIP date. So Travis changes here into his second least crazy outfit of the group date. It is a Richard Simmons costume, complete with wig, an orange headband, and a neon pink singlet and green shorts. A step up, in my opinion.
This reminded me of two things. Firstly, I could not stop thinking about when Conrad got dressed up as Queen Kiki on the Mardi Gras episode of Brooke's season of Bachelorette. Yes. I feel like this is a similar, not just a similar look, but a similar vibe that he's courting here, because he is doing, like, I mean, it's a Richard Simmons impression, but it is also like he's doing a high voice and he's kind of mincing around a little bit. You know, it's like on the borderline of being, I don't think it's inappropriate, but I think it's like a caricature, you know.
I will say I had the same thoughts when I was watching this. I was just like, uh-oh. But in his defense, Richard Simmons was like that.
And honestly, it like similar to Conrad, who I think, you know, he's not, I don't think he was out or any, like, you know, he was just like embracing a more flamboyant and more feminine side of himself in that moment. I feel like that's what Conrad's doing here too. I don't sense like ill will or ignorance or anything informing this, really. I think it's
I think you're right to be a little bit wary, though. Like, I certainly was when, I mean, it's literally like year 12 flashbacks of like the guys in my year dressing up and being, you know, very, very, acting very, very similarly, but in not a particularly good faith way. You know what I mean? So yeah, I had the same, fear.
It's that radar that goes, is it is the joke here that it's funny because it's gay, or is the joke it's funny because it's Richard Simmons?
Right.
Yes.
Right. And I think it gives more points to Travis in a way that he is not doing that, and that he, you know, this is one of the subtle ways in which he is, you know, broadening our, not just our expectation of him, but also like our image of what a football playing white heterosexual American man will be like. You know, like, I think it's not a revolution that he's, you know, embarking upon or whatever, but like we should applaud in some small way these moments where it's like, I'm not too big to do this or whatever. The other thing it made me think about is it can't have been much later than this. I think it was probably 2017. Do you remember when that guy made a podcast about trying to find out where Richard Simmons was?
Yeah, Missing Richard Simmons.
Yes.
And it was like the most popular podcast in the entire world for a few weeks. And then everybody realized, like, hang on a sec, maybe this is just an invasion of privacy. Like, this guy does not want to be found right now.
Yeah. And I'm wondering if either of you know now that Richard Simmons is active again on social media.
Oh my God. That's so bad. I think earlier in this episode, I referred to him in the past tense as though he had passed away. And if that's not true, I am really sorry, Richard Simmons.
Oh no, he's alive.
Okay. That's great. That's great posting. News. Oh, that's even better news. Alive and posting.
I mean, we all wish better for him than that, but, you know, if that's the way it has to be in 2024,
yeah,
good for him, providing those good proof of life.
That away as a potential title for the second album, also Eilish.
Yeah. What's that one?
Alive and posting.
Oh, yeah. Really good. Really good. There are a couple of interactions here that I thought were kind of curious. Maya, who is Travis's pick to go on this date, tells Travis, I actually haven't worked out in a while. And she says the following, which I would love for either of you to tell me what it means. And I saw some stomach stuff with the knee. Yeah.
I assume she's talking about some kind of legs in tabletop sit-up situation. Maybe. I don't know.
Like one of those like ab swing sort of like, I'm picturing some sort of like Danos Direct. You get on the ground, there's like a headrest attached to your bar that you then use to sort of do sit ups with. I think that's what she's referring to, because that's very rigid.
Yeah. Yes.
Maya also tells Travis, quote, I've never had white chocolate before. which I actually do understand what that means, and that's interesting. And I thought Travis's response to this, because Maya is a woman of color, I think she's a black woman, and Travis instantly kind of code switches when he hears her say that in a way that I thought was interesting and kind of revealed some potential things about like what his social life is like or what his upbringing was like or whatever, where he like kind of, you know, he changes the way that he's speaking to her, and he says like, you can talk it. I just got to see you walk it. We're going to see how you walk through this ab session right now. But in a way that's very like, you know, I think he's like adapting, which I'm curious about.
I think that Travis is a really malleable communicator, and he's also in an NFL locker room with predominantly, I think 75% of the NFL is made up of black players. He's around black people a lot. Yeah. And the code switch that I think you're referring to is probably somewhat of a comfortable one for him, and not one that I was like, you're set in the same
totally
way.
Yeah, I didn't have like, you know, the hairs on my back of my neck standing up or whatever. It was more just like, oh, I guess, you know, I haven't seen this, and it was interesting to see him, you know, like maybe he's doing this to make her feel more comfortable. I was trying to sort of read into
he's like playing in a different way and seeing if that works, I think.
Yeah, which I think maybe belies a level of interest in Maya that the plot of this episode is not really leaning on, but I wonder if that might come back up again.
I think Travis Kelce is a very, very charismatic person.
Yeah.
And something about charismatic people that I've noticed is their ability to fit in with anybody at any given party and not only make that person feel comfortable, but make that person feel special and significant. And I think Travis is very, very good at that with these women. Like, even in those 60-second things in the first episode where he was just, like, face-to-face with a woman, he almost, in a way, seems like he's aware of his status, I suppose, quote-unquote. Like, he seems to me as though he is aware that he is a very powerful person compared to these women in a very powerful position. And he's almost like he's very, very good at that bachelor thing that not many bachelors are good at, which is coming down to the women's level, I suppose, and kind of like being believable when he says like, oh, I'm really nervous too. Like, I believed him when he said that.
Yeah.
And I think that that mirroring he does to, you know, for lack of a better word, is literally part and parcel of like who he is as a person, you know?
But now it's time for the real deal photo shoot. It is a PO shoot or PIO, Pilates.
I think it's PIO.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they're doing stacked planks, which incidentally I think is a meat dish that you can order at Slaps in Kansas City.
So PIO, the mixture of Pilates and yoga, I think seems to have been developed by this woman, Shailene Johnson, who is also leading the activity on the date.
Right.
Did some Googling. Almost every hit I could find about PIO is from the year that this episode dropped. So I think it's like a trend. You know, you would think that the mixture of Pilates and yoga would be kind of evergreen, but I guess giving it this name maybe dated it a little bit. I actually have a workout program of my own. I don't know if you guys know about this, but instead of having to do any exercises, you just watch Studio Ghibli movies on the couch. It's called Ponyo. Really good. You could get in my exact shape by doing that, and I really, really recommend it.
Well, look, from Pio to Ponyo to Lolo, who the show is giving Dodo music to, and she's asking Travis all about his fitness routine. This is the thing with the meaty thighs. Basically, what we're doing is just like smash cut of what here's what's going on with Travis and some of these women here. The next person that he speaks to is Lauren from Missouri, and despite promising her a kiss if she can score basketball on him, he dunks
classic batchy strategy, by the way.
Brutally blocks her shot attempt like he's Billy Madison in the fourth grade.
Yeah, it's completely unfair. He's like he's a professional athlete and also used to play basketball.
And so much taller than her. But then
yeah.
Somehow Lauren makes a basket and she and Travis lock lips right there on the court, and it's a cause of consternation for Maya in particular.
This kiss?
This kiss.
I was waiting for it. This is the first kiss of the season that gets proper twinkly wifey background music, which I think is worth putting a pin in. It's like sort of, it's not the exact same as Bachelor. I think it's more acoustic guitar driven than like piano, which I think you normally hear, but it's very significant. It stood out to me. Lauren seems like one to watch.
Next, Jenny from Oregon hands Anika from Minnesota's letter to Travis, blowing her own opportunity to spend time with him. Bad gameplay.
All right, I want to stop down on this because this is insane to me. This is Jenny. She's the messenger. She gets some alone time with Travis, and this is how she chooses to use it. She delivers the letter and then immediately gets up and leave. And that, to me, is like a huge gameplay error. And I started brainstorming like different things that you could do in this circumstance if you have been selected as the messenger. We don't know a single thing about Jenny as an audience at this point, apart from the fact that she is holding an important item. I think there are almost any other choice. I mean, this doesn't pan out terribly for her, but ultimately I think this is just an opportunity that's being given to her that she doesn't do a lot with. But I tried to tease out, and I hope you guys have some thoughts about this too, what would happen if certain things, you know, went a different way. First of all, there's the opportunity to just straight up destroy the letter. There was never a letter, right? This is your play. This, I think, will make you a target for the other women because word of the letter will naturally get around, even if there's no physical evidence remaining. But I do think if you approach that situation correctly, you can then get a victimization arc out of it where you go to Travis like, I don't know why they're all, you know, being so mean and like, I'm just trying to, you know, I'm here for you and whatever, which I think will appeal to Travis. Or you could then use that to kickstart a real chaotic villain edit for yourself, which I think will then appeal to the audience, maybe appeal to the producers of the show, you know, make yourself a lasting memory on TV. Even if it doesn't necessarily lead to you getting together with Travis.
I would like to discuss it now. Look, we hear Travis reading it in VO and it is segmented from what the rest of the letter says. So I do have as much of the rest of the letter as I could make out.
But it starts where he says, and he reads it out this part correctly, which you can also see written down. It says, I had feelings for Eleanor that I've actually never felt for anyone in my life. I had to.
Walked right into it. So it reads in VO, Travis, I wanted to talk with you yesterday. I feel surrounded by the howling mad hyenas in this demented animal asylum. Incredible. I desperately wish I could escape here to spend more time with you one-on-one. Have a great, in all caps, time on the shoot, 3 exclamation points. So that's the version that we got. Do you want to talk about that first?
Can I just say how funny it was to look over at my screen as I was kind of watching this and doing other things and to see Travis Kelce reading so determinedly, but the thing coming over voiceover, I was like, what show am I watching? Like, that's not a choice that you would make. I don't think I've ever seen that before, unless it was played for gags, but that was like,
it was
almost
straight
down the line. Yeah. Right. So that was strange. Second thing that, I mean, this is the point that I was kind of talking about before with Anika and that, I'm, you know, the sole logical thinker in this pack of hyenas. I really can't stand that characterization. I think it's really yuck. I don't think it's funny, really. I think it's kind of, in a way, it's kind of funny because she's written it on like a napkin or whatever. So it really does seem like she's in a prison and she's like sneaking notes out. But on the other hand, I'm just like, dude, you asked one of these hyenas, quote unquote, to do you a massive favor, and she did it. So she can't be that bad. It can't be that bad.
Yeah.
And that really annoyed me. But, you know, whatever. It happened so long ago, it doesn't matter.
This thing that gets read out, this thing that Travis says in voiceover, I freeze frame this. I was not able to find that part in the text at all.
No, me neither.
I believe that that part may have been totally made up. What we see on the card is a little more like sort of neutral and kind of comes off like funny and nice to me anyway.
Oh.
Yeah. I'm having a hard time deciphering some of the handwriting. So I will just point out words that, well, I'll just say blank when I don't have a word. But she says, Travis, I hope this homemade prison card, since we can't leave the mansion, strikes the right balance of high art and J. Crew gear, blank, blank duct tape.
So I think it's just crew gear. And I think what she's referring to is the fact that in addition to the paper towel that she has used to make this, she's also kind of taped the card together to give it like a two-ply sort of effect or whatever, using some duct tape that she has borrowed from the crew.
Oh,
so she's like, it's the right balance of high art and crew gear, which she's put in inverted commas,
with
the duct tape.
I so wanted to talk with you yesterday. We saw that. Hope I get the opportunity to talk with. And then the thumb is covering the lower right.
That's where it's pretty much covered up. Yeah.
But what I can make out says, Sky, course I like. Please trust than all theremin way, perhaps, and then pooted this.
Now, there's a good chance theremin is not actually in there. But, like, yeah, the demented animal asylum, howling mad hyenas, that feels to me like a creation of an overzealous reality TV presenter.
And this man's got a big thumb, but, like, it can't cover that much.
Okay, if that's the case, then I take back everything I just said like 2 minutes ago. Because if she didn't actually write that, and if that, I mean, as a producer, are you allowed to insinuate that somebody wrote something that they didn't write?
Oh, it's the Wild West. I think you can do fucking anything.
Okay, well, in that case, then I apologize to whatever her name is, and I'm sorry, because I don't think that you actually wrote that, because no one's thumb is that big.
Unless it's like on the back of the card or something, but we didn't see anything on the front. I don't know. I mean, look, I should have asked Travis about this when he was on the podcast last week. I hadn't watched this episode yet, so that's, you know, that's just how it goes.
Veronica, the pastry chef from New Jersey, is chosen for the VIP date because Travis liked how she did the stacked plank. And Maya, who was originally selected to go on this date, is none too pleased about any of these developments. And we're whipped now immediately back to the mansion so that she can confront Minnesota Anika. Maya, whom I would like to remind you, has previously fallen into a toilet, begins her takedown of Anika from Minnesota as such. Oh, you know what? In fact, I'm going to ask you to get into character here because I've written it all down. Okay. Eilish, as you are our guest, you can choose if you want to be Maya or Anika.
Well, I think I want to be the star.
Maya's got more lines.
Can I be Maya? Is that okay?
Yes, of course.
All right. Jenny almost got beat up today because of you. You were the same person who came in my room and said, Maya, if you pick me for this date, I won't outshine you. You can't proclaim that you're a real-ass person.
I'm not.
Clearly you're not. That's obviously true, fake bitch.
Sorry, you guys, I'm a robot.
What she did is, she went out of her way to write a letter to Travis. It's a shame that you have to be that desperate.
My glass is empty. I'm thirsty.
I'm not talking to you. I'm not done talking to you. I'm not done talking. I let you talk, so let me talk.
I don't need to let you.
Anyway, she's irrelevant. Anyway.
thrilling drama here that goes absolutely nowhere because Anika's
just clearly not interested in
like
being
she
part
just
of this.
Hits Maya with this series of non sequiturs that ends up with Maya just like tying herself in a knot where she says, "I'm not talking to you. I'm not done talking to you." Like that, those two sentences smushed together. I don't know what Anika did to her, but like staring down the barrel of the camera and saying, "Sorry, guys, I'm a robot," has got to be one of the classiest moves that you can make.
So every now and again on reality TV, you get a character who is so kooky and out there that no one else knows what to do with them. And it's actually very rare, even though producers do try to cast these people quite regularly. One person that I'm thinking of in particular is from RuPaul's Drag Race. Her name is Tammy. And she was on the first season. And she is so batshit insane that no one knew what to do with her. And as a result, she was always present for drama, but never, ever at the heart of it.
Yeah, it's sometimes a character like that will kind of be embraced as like almost like a mascot in a way where it's like, yeah. I'm thinking of, God, what's her name from Bachelor in Paradise?
Oh, you mean Brittany?
Yeah. There's a level of chaos there that's like, well, if they're not harming anybody, then like, sure, let them just do their thing or whatever. But in this instance, it seems like she's in some way become tangled up, even though she doesn't really want to. Like fight her way out of this, you know, new position.
Well,
she's in.
I think these people aggravate the real, like, quote unquote, players of the game.
Yeah.
Because for several different reasons, but I think a lot of the time they're just like, "You're not taking this seriously," blah blah blah. But of course, they're not taking it seriously because they're almost alien-like in this scenario. They don't know how to take it seriously, and that's very aggravating for somebody like Maya, I think.
Yeah,
because I sense Maya is like, I am working so hard to get across the correct version of myself and to try and present myself the way that I want to. Seeing somebody like Anika, who is like, just, you know, whatever. Just, you know, the Tasmanian devil when it turns into like the whirlwind, you know. Like, you know, in cartoons where they're having a fight and it's just like a big puff of smoke or whatever with like occasional hands and legs and stars and shit flying out of it. I sense that energy.
Like, this is the behavior of a desperate woman. Maya is like standing on like a shoebox or something. Standing on a little platform and trying to get through, but you can't get through to a rogue cowboy like Anika. Like, you just can't. It's impossible.
Anika is also wearing this like insanely fluffy, like almost like a cloud, like white top thing.
So good.
And it's just like, it's so hard to have authority over a person in this position because they just like, the rules of normal life don't apply to them, you know? Travis has his VIP date here with Veronica, the pastry chef from New Jersey. Is that right?
Yeah.
But Travis, this is my favorite Travis outfit of the episode and one that I stopped to take a screenshot of because it really delighted me. He's wearing like this button-up shirt and his hair is combed. So it's like, this is formal Travis. But he looks so ridiculous because it's just like, it's not like full-blown formal Travis where he's wearing like a suit or anything like that. It's more just like Travis is kind of scrubbed up a little bit. I'll give you a look there.
Oh my God.
Very nice.
Totally. Yeah. It's kind of giving like, he's the class clown, but the teacher has made him comb his hair for school photo day kind of thing.
Yes.
But then at the end, Travis presents her with a vase full of flowers, and they are pointedly not roses, although this is like the exact circumstance at which rose would be handed out. And Veronica reads the note that he has included with this gift to her, and the note says, quote, "Veronica, so hot, want to touch the hiney, love Travis."
Do we know what this is?
What do you mean by that?
This is a quote from Billy Madison.
Oh, no way!
Xavier, have I just movied you?
Yeah, I was not thinking about that at all.
For the first time in podcast history, I have movied you.
Wow, that's a movie reference. I've seen that movie plenty of times, but I did not catch it.
So it's the way that Adam Sandler talks about the grade 4 teacher, Veronica Vaughn.
Sure.
And the quote is, Veronica Vaughn, so hot, want to touch the hiney. And Zev, I texted you immediately because it's a film reference that I get and because I was raised on Channel 10 at 6:30 p.m. on a Saturday night. And this is the moment at which Travis makes sense to me. I was he's Billy Madison core. Like, this is the accumulation of all these dumb Adam Sandler movies, but all grown up.
In the Wall Street Journal last year, Travis Kelce did this huge profile about himself. And in that profile, it revealed a lot of details about his relationship with Taylor Swift. And one of those details was the fact that he told Taylor, allegedly, he says, that if she was going to be with him, she had to accept that he loved Adam Sandler movies. Like, that was a big point in that profile. So that is a fascinating snippet, which makes complete sense with who Travis Kelce is, even today.
Mm-hmm.
Totally. Yeah, that is a big puzzle piece. I totally see him emulating that in a lot of his behavior, in a way that I find very charming, as I do with Adam, you know?
So we're back at the women's mansion now, and after Maya has lost her mind trying to get Minnesota, Anika, to see some sense, Minnesota, Anika suddenly has an air horn and she is blowing it at Maya. This is fantastic.
Yeah, so here, let me set the scene. Maya goes into messenger Jenny's room to apologize and say, like, I'm so sorry that I made you do, you know, that this had to, you know, you turn into this sort of like side character in this show or whatever. Mm. You know, she's kind of trying to like level the playing field, you know. Yeah, exactly. But Anika is in there already. I think maybe Anika and messenger Jenny are sharing a room, and Anika is wearing an N95 mask as a hat. And she's wielding an air horn, which she repeatedly sounds over the top of Maya trying to apologize to Jenny over and over again. Truly unhinged and delightful behavior. But this is the point where I noticed something that, like, I was truly, like, standing up from the couch and going, like, holy shit, what the fuck is this show? How do we not notice this? Because as if enough things were not going on with this woman, Anika, who, need I remind you, dated Fabio. We talked about that last week. She is also in this moment wearing an Israeli Defense Force t-shirt as her pajama top. So, yeah, like, I went from truly adoring Anika and all of the chaotic vibes that she has brought to this episode to, like, a very, very sharp 180 into now being extremely concerned about what's going on with Anika.
Okay. The 2-minute warning has sounded and the 6 women up for elimination are V. Rich from Mississippi, Jamie Lee from West Virginia, who we have not met yet.
Literally zero screen time.
From Washington, who wants a man with meaty thighs. Jenny, the giver of the prison note from Oregon. Jessica from Nevada, who we also have not met. And Anika from Minnesota, she of the Air Force, air horn and shirt. It is elimination night. Travis is dressed in a dark blue suit, and he speaks with Anika firstly. He says that he's worried about her, and Anika says that she's uncomfortable because people in the house have been getting mean. Travis asks if there's anyone in particular that he needs to know about. And Anika says, you're goddamn right. Like, she's on Grey's Anatomy or something and has to make a life or death decision. Anika says that Jenny and Jamie are here for the right reasons, but the other 3 women, V. Rich, Lolo, and Jessica, are not. Jenny is sent back to Oregon because Travis doesn't think they'd work as a couple. And next.
Yeah, Travis like praises her for delivering the letter. He says, like, that was the right thing to do. You are selfless. This was a smart, you know, like, you are worthy of praise for this, but he can't see him working. I wonder if that's, do either of you rub up against that? I sense that may be the case, but I also feel like she had an opportunity with the letter that maybe she could have turned into something.
I mean, I think at this stage in the competition, like in any reality TV dating scenario, you're literally just looking for a reason to send people home. Like, there's so many people, you just have to get rid of them. That's a really good reason. If you ask me, that's a really good reason to send someone home, because like, clearly she's not in it for, you know, whatever. I think that he probably laid it on a little bit too thick. I think he could have flagged. Like, I wouldn't have been mad if he'd flagged, like, because he already did. Hey, why did you give me this letter from some other girl if you're here to date me? Like, that makes no sense.
Yeah.
Like, he should, I kind of think he should have told her that. But, you know, whatever, that's me. Doesn't really matter.
Next, it's Lolo's turn to embarrass herself. She says, Travis, I'm not with them two, and I'm not with them two, referring to Jamie and Anika and V Rich and Jessica. So do you want the treat or the tricks?
I thought that was not an acceptable thing to say to somebody, reality TV show or not.
Yeah.
I think it's that same thing as the BBBs, where it's like you're thinking on your feet. You want to try and come up with something that feels like it's catchy, or, you know, like something they could put on a t-shirt or caption a GIF with or something like that. But I think in this instance, it just really doesn't work. And the fact that she ends up saying it again in a minute is really like not in her favor.
Yeah, we do cut to her in confessional in just a minute, and she doubles down in much the same way as Travis doubled down with Viva Las Vegas.
Right.
The Super Bowl.
Yeah, because she gets sent home, and then in her ITM on the way out, she's like, he sent home the treat and kept the tricks. And I'm like, that line is just not good enough to be repeated, you know?
No, not at all.
Also, just for the record, this is another moment in the grand tradition of reality TV show references to Halloween that take place very close to Halloween, but not during the actual week of Halloween. This episode was broadcast in like early to mid October. And I was like, come on, guys, let's line it up a little better if we're going to have a pun like this, right?
So that leaves Jamie Lee, V Rich, and Jessica. And of these three women, we have met V Rich before, and we have not met Jamie Lee and Jessica. Travis puts him on the spot. He asks, why are you here? And eventually he thinks Jessica's answer is the worst and she's the one who has to go home.
A bit of a dud ending for this episode, which has had some real high highs, you know?
I think they were onto something when they thought up the idea of having Travis involved and having a dialogue with the women when he's sending them home, and having that decision be made seemingly in the moment and having them be allowed to like state their case to him. I kind of like that. I actually think that's really quite interesting, but I think perhaps the execution leaves a little to be desired when it comes to the final three that were sitting there. And he's like, okay, well, why are you here? And it's like, well, what do you want them to say?
Right.
You know,
give me a rubric. I need a marking criteria for this. And then we can properly assess whose answer was best. But listener, that does bring us to the end of another episode of the Bachelor of Hearts podcast. Alish Gilligan, thank you so, so much for being here. How can listeners connect with you? How can they be friends with you on the internet? What can they do to stream your songs and run it up in the way that it deserves to be?
Don't just stream that shit. Get out there, get on Bandcamp, throw some dollars down, buy it, burn it to a CD, give it to your mom and dad, tell them if they like it to buy it too. Eilish, you're one of the greatest, hardest working, most talented, funniest people I've ever had the pleasure of meeting.
Oh, stop. Thank you so much. I love coming on Bachelor of Hearts. It's one of my favorite podcasts still. And if you want to follow me, I'm really lucky because my name is, no one else has my name. So you just Google Eilish Gilligan, you'll find me everywhere you need to find me. And probably in places where I shouldn't be also. So
you got a great newsletter. I was reading your article about Elvis. It was a good review.
Yes. Yes.
He's been in some interesting movies.
Oh, Zabie, you've got to watch the Elvis movies. If you watch one Elvis Presley movie, make it Live a Little, Love a Little, because that is the one that has the scene where he's having a drug-induced conversation with a furry. And it is, like, the weirdest, strangest, like, pop culture interaction with the landscape of the 60s that you've ever seen in your entire life. And it's fascinating. Anyway, I have a weekly column in the Smart Dumb Stuff newsletter from Shameless Podcast. And if you want to subscribe to that, it is on the Shameless Podcast Instagram, I think. So that's where you can find me writing about Elvis Presley and Nero Pets in the very same column. How do those two things make sense together? They don't.
You will have to subscribe to find out.
Max, what should we? We should probably plug some stuff. Everybody should hang out with us on the internet.
You do it. You can find us at BOH Pod, wherever you go to find social media. And this is the podcast. You don't need to know about how to find that one because you've found it. So,
Bachelor of Hearts Osh posting is the best place to come and hang out with us and our friends and our enemies. And we won't tell you who's who. You got to find out for yourself. Of course, if you'd like to support the show, you can find us on patreon.com/BOHpod. You can get some bonus content there if you nasty. What else do we have to plug? We'll be back again with another episode of this show before too long. I don't know what happens in it. I mean, look, it's going to be pretty fun. That'll probably do, I think, right?
Yeah, I think that's going to do
it. This is a fun one. Eilish, thanks again. We love you. You're the best.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
And to all of our listeners, of course, we love you.
We love you.
Goodbye.